Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Ja, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur einen Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
Do you know what I hated about my job? The cold. The biting, incessant cold which cut through, no matter how many layers I wore, making it feel like the marrow in my bones was aching. There was the fact I spent hours on end crouched over, scrabbling about in the dark. The food was another gripe. The mush which we heated over portable stoves that all tasted the same no matter what it said on the tin. I hated sleeping on a thin mattress in a tent as well. Though sleeping is the last thing I could manage with the pins and needles in my skin left by the cold and my guts churning from whatever processed stew I had forced down. Apart from that, my job was great. I was an archaeologist. I gained my degree, was working towards post-grad qualifications, and was on my first dig as a professional rather than an enthusiastic student. We'd flown to the site a few days before. This was a long, skeleton-rattling journey that had eventually arrived late afternoon. As we had hurried to put our tents up, the desolate landscape which stretched out around us as far as I could see made me feel like we were on an alien planet rather than in the far north of our country. The Alaskan border bled into the vast expanse of the Arctic less than 100 miles away. When the small plane that had brought us here departed, escaping before darkness fell, I felt a momentary flash of fear. I'd never felt cut off from the world like this before. Checking my mobile did not help. This was clearly the land the internet had not yet reached. Then I'd given myself a mental kick up the backside. This tent wasn't going to put itself up. I'd spent the next hour trying to work out where all the damn poles were meant to go. There were four of us on the dig. I was the youngest. Max was around 10 years my senior, but junior to me in the setup. I do not know why his career appeared to have stalled, but it was clear Max had an attitude problem. In the short time we'd worked together, he was constantly criticizing me, to my face and openly to the others. I hoped to chill out as the team bonded on site. Then there was Julia. She was a research fellow, maybe late 20s. She was very quiet and seemed totally focused on the job at hand, which I admired, and I figured I could learn a lot from her. The boss was Professor Mitchell. Mitch, as he insisted we called him, in a kind of naff way. He was not a star in the academic world, but he had a reputation as someone who got things done. Although we all had links with different universities, the funder for this expedition was actually a major corporation. We were one of the good causes being supported through its philanthropic program. We all had glossy brochures about this in our kit, but certainly hadn't read it. And I doubted very much the others had. We had no time for such things. We were working inwards, towards the center point of the excavation area, painstakingly clearing away the frozen soil a few inches at a time. We'd been led here by satellite images that showed the outline of a structure. The oral history of the area told of a race which lived here around 1,000 years ago, one which had developed a relatively complex form of civilization, but there are no physical artifacts proving their existence. We were determined to change that. My nose was almost touching the soil I was clearing as I tried to decide if I was looking at a man-made fragment or just another pebble, when I heard Max exclaim, "Yes!" I looked up to see him fist pumping the air. The macho effect of this was spoiled slightly by the fact that he was still holding his trowel. He looked like he was scooping air rather than celebrating. Still, he seemed very excited, so I stood up, slapping my legs on the way as I tried to force some feeling back into them, and went to see what was going on. Julia and Professor Mitchell did the same. "What you got there?" Mitch asked amiably as the three of us gathered around Max. He had something in the palm of his free hand and was staring at it like he was hypnotized. It appeared to me to be some kind of coin. Hints of a gold-colored surface showed through a layer of dirt, and it was maybe 2 inches in diameter. I tried to keep my professional detachment and failed. "Wow," I said, "that's amazing." "It certainly is. Can you pass me the artifact, please, Max?" asked Mitch and held out his hand. Max did so, but I noticed the reluctance on his face, almost as if he did not want to share his discovery with anyone else, and I caught a knowing glance between Mitch and Julia. Perhaps I wasn't the only one who had issues with Max's attitude. Mitch took a small brush out of his pocket and began to gently clear away the dirt. "Wow," I said again as the coin was revealed. The gold color was dull but brilliant. However, that was not what was enthralling me. It was the markings on the coin, which showed a face in profile, as on many coins. Only this face was crying out in terror. There was no mistaking the expression that had been rendered. "Fascinating," Mitch muttered as he turned the coin over and methodically continued to clean it. A new face appeared, this time looking out from the coin. The eyes of the face were crossed out with X's. "It's almost like they've been scarred out so that the person depicted cannot see," Julia commented. "Not see what?" I asked. Mitch looked at me and said, "Whatever it scared the life out of the poor devil on the other side of the coin, presumably." His tone was light, but I could tell he was as excited as the rest of us. Meanwhile, Max's attention had returned to the ground, and I saw he was loosening another coin, and that there were more lying close to the surface. Dozens of them. Mitch clapped his hands together. "Okay, team," he said. "Let's bag him and tag him. I think we've made a major discovery here, but we need to let the artifacts do the talking and not expose our expectations on them." Julia nodded enthusiastically, as did I. Max had not taken his eyes off the coins. Over the hours that followed, I almost forgot about the cold, even though the wind had got noticeably stronger and the temperatures were dropping. When we finally all headed to the main tent, which we were using as our storage and study center, it was a struggle to walk upright. Our 4 individual tents were lined up each a dozen feet apart and facing the entrance to the main tent. Inside this, supplies were piled up against the sides, food and first aid kit, comms equipment, which so far had stubbornly refused to work in the freezing conditions, and a pistol to be used to scare off any inquisitive large wildlife that might come our way. Supervised by Mitch, Julia laid the coins out on a clear plastic sheet and began to photograph both sides of each. I then weighed them and designated individual serial numbers. There were 32 coins with a range of truly remarkable and bizarre markings. In addition to the screaming and blinded faces, there were coins which showed groups of figures fleeing something unseen. There were bones, wide-eyed skulls and rib cages. There were bodies, the representations of dead bodies we believed, piled on top of each other. On some of the coins, flames rose from the bodies to depict a bonfire of cadavers. I finished noting down the last serial number, turned to Mitch and asked, "What do you think the designs on the coins represent?" The professor's attention remained on the coins as he replied, "Possibly that the people living here a millennia ago suffered a cataclysmic event. This could have been a virulent disease, hence the destruction of the bodies to try and prevent the spread. Or they could have been attacked by another race that were not native to this area and tried to flee from this threat. These are speculations on my part, and we have a long way to go before we can prevent robust theories." "Whatever happened," Julia added, "the artisans who created these coins were inspired by something truly terrifying." A moment of silence followed. I guess we were all lost in our own thoughts. Then Max said, "I think they're beautiful." The silence that followed this felt quite uncomfortable. Finally, Mitch cleared his throat and said, "Well, quite. Now, it's been a long day, so I suggest we try and get some sleep." I welcomed this suggestion. Maybe tonight, I might even get some sleep, I thought. "Night all," I said. "Good night, James," Mitch replied. "Don't let the bedbugs bite," Julia said with a smile. We made our way towards the tent door. Max showed no signs of moving. "Is there a problem, Max?" Mitch asked. He didn't answer at first. The rapt expression I'd first noticed when he held the coin in his hand seemed fixed on his face. "Max?" Mitch repeated, his tone firmer this time. Max's reply, when it came, shocked me. "I will stay here and guard the coins," he said. Mitch looked puzzled. "The only people here for 1,000 miles are us," he said, "and we're not going to do anything with the coins other than study them." At this, Max's face darkened. "You idiot," he said. "These coins will transform the life of the academic who claims the discovery, and you think that's going to be you, Professor, don't you?" As he spoke, Max had been moving towards Mitch, and he virtually spat these last words in his face. Mitch flinched. "Please, Max," Julia said, "you need to calm down." She reached out to place a hand on his shoulder. Max lashed out, striking her arm. She winced in pain and held her arm to her chest. "That's enough," Mitch yelled, then turned to Julia and gently led her out of the tent. "Jeez, man," I said to Max, "you're out of order." He glared at me with what I can only describe as pure hatred in his eyes. I wanted to say more, but decided it was better to back off. There was clearly no reasoning with him. Back in my tent, I could not stop shivering. The short walk from the main tent had taken only minutes, but the weather's swift deterioration continued at pace, and its effects on my body were vicious. I glanced out a few times in the long hours that followed, and knew I would need to wait for the weather to improve. I had a small burner stove and some leftovers, which I could reheat. I rationed myself and tried to be patient. It was hard to keep track of time. The only measure I really had was the increasing hunger once I finished the meager rations. Eventually, I decided I had no choice. I needed to leave my tent to get food and hook back up with Mitch and Julia. As for Max, I could only hope he'd come to his senses. I stepped out of my tent and was stopped in my tracks by the horrific sight of blood staining the icy ground. Two lines of red ran from Mitch's and Julia's tents into the main tent. I swallowed down bile and hurried forwards. If they were hurt, I needed to try and help them. I pushed my way through the entrance flap. A scream formed inside me. A hideous creature was crouched over Mitch and Julia, who lay unmoving in a congealing pool of blood. The creature was ripping at the flesh of Mitch's cheek. It was a corruption of the human form of a man that had once been called Max. I could recognize traces of his features in its sickening visage. Its eyes were sunken pits of darkness. Its skin was taut over bones that jutted out. Terror gripped me, a coldness stoked by fear, worse than any I'd felt from nature, penetrated me. I stood, staring, as the creature, alerted by my presence, looked up from its obscene butchery. Then, it spoke. Its words were halting, as if the act of speaking was one that was being remembered, an act that used to come naturally before it changed. "Look at you," it said. "So afraid, so pathetic. Are you going to run away from me and save yourself?" It looked down at the bodies of Mitch and Julia, now forever still in their bloodied resting places. I knew with heartbreaking certainty. Then it continued. "Or are you going to burn the corpses like they did 1,000 years ago, to try and save them from being consumed?" it said, then smiled. I would welcome that. I liked cooked meat. Then it placed the wad of the gore it had torn from Mitch into its mouth. I realized with a sudden clarity that felt like a physical blow that I would be next. It would kill me, feast on me. All mine, it muttered. My coins, my blood to drink and bones to crunch. All mine. As it did so, I took the one chance I had. I threw myself at where the pistol lay, grabbed it and aimed the gun at close range into the creature. It howled in agony and fell to its knees. It was badly hurt, but I had not killed it. It looked up at me, insanity flared in its eyes, and it dragged itself from the tent, its own blood marking its progress. I stood, breathing heavily, and then began to weep. I was alone in a nightmare from which there was no waking. 5 days have passed since then. I buried Mitch and Julia as best I could in the frozen ground. But the next morning, the graves had been desecrated and their bodies removed. The creature had its feast after all. It has not come for the coins yet. I have the reloaded pistol ready to use when it does try. Until then, I will hide this journal in the hope that someone finds it, if I do not survive the horrors of this cold, desolate place.
My advice for entrepreneurs is definitely to level up with Shopify. The platform is just never a worry. Like, I have so many worries, but the platform is never one. I feel like Shopify really thinks about how they can optimize. It just always feels very ahead of the curve. Everything is just super easy to connect and link. They really know what we need. Time and money that is saved, I can spend on other things and on growth.
Start your free trial at shopify.com.